Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Jen A. I reside in Colorado and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you, God. Today is Wednesday, May 21st, 2025. It's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, chapter number 7, titled Working with Others. We're on page number 98, and we're reading that third paragraph. It begins with, Know the Domestic Problem, through one paragraph ending with, Discussed in an Atmosphere of Helpfulness and Friendliness. And we're going to comment on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Team Wednesday. We have the 12 Steps with Stephanie R., 12 Traditions with Jen P. The reader of the text today will be Nancy P., our closing reader is Penny C., and backing us up is Patrick O. The newcomer greeter is Reva P., and the second hour moderator is Jeannie B. Here are the reference numbers for yesterday's Big Book study. For Tuesday, May 20th, 2025, the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting is 22,448. That's 22448. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, it's 22449. That's 22,449. Here's the OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering. Whoops. Sorry, my text got funny here. Oh, no. Just a second. Sorry. What happens when you use tech like your iPad to moderate? There you go. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively, and there are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine, and we take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose here. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose. That's to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Stephanie R. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Stephanie R. calling from Missouri. Here are 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
I will now ask Jen P. to read the 12 traditions.
Hey, good morning. This is Jen P. calling from New Jersey. Here are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you so much, Stephanie R. and Jen P. for being of service on Team Wednesday. This is how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature that we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. And we have somebody unmuted. Thank you. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year. There we go. Thank you. Oops. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is six months. There is no absence requirement for sharing on the topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. So to share, you're going to press star 1 to unmute, and then once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today, we resume our study in the chapter titled Working with Others. It's in the Big Book on page number 98. It's the third paragraph. And then I will now ask Nancy T. to begin reading.
Hi, good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Go right ahead, Nancy.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Nancy P. recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see, may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. So, Jen, you'll time me, please. You know, my life in recovery has been, had I known what was waiting for me, perhaps I would have shut up and listened a few years earlier, but it doesn't matter. I got where I needed to be when I needed to be there. And, you know, the journey began. And, you know, I'll give you an example. My husband is the best guy in the world. I mean, not only is he the best guy in the world on his own merit, compared to the other men that I dated and my two most serious relationships, one of which was with a guy that was definitely going to hit me at some point, and another with a guy that was had no integrity. He was on parole from a maximum security prison in Florida, and I thought I was going to marry each of them. And luckily, that didn't happen. And so I got, not only did I get this guy that's awesome and fantastic every minute of every day, but I have risen to, I don't like to use the word deserve, but I have risen to encompass, you know, be encompassed by that, and thus have become my own brand of easier to get along with. And so my example is, on Mother's Day, in previous years, I said, oh, let's go to the Arboretum, and, you know, my kids were little, and they'd complain, I don't like it. So then I stopped doing that, and I said, let's go to the garden center, because I get to say what I want on Mother's Day. And I was acutely aware of every sigh, every watch check, every, you know, hushing of them that my husband, while I browsed around. And this year I said to my husband, on Mother's Day, I get to do what I want. And what I want to do is clean the garage. And, you know, he was hesitant because, you know, he has his bits in there and I have my bits. And then there's all this other junk. And, you know, he was hesitant because I tend to go through things like a tornado, right? You know, I get rid of everything and put it all away and, you know, get rid of it and put it on the curb and all that. And he said, we can do that for a few minutes. And, you know, we were there for 3.5 hours and our garage is in great shape now. And, you know, that is, you know, that never would have happened because I can say, this is what I think. Oh, I see what you get. I see what you're getting at. And one other thing, that we were not in concert for several days this week, because we don't fight. I mean, my 37th wedding anniversary is tomorrow, but we don't have knockdown, drag out fights, but we are not able to communicate. And I was miserable being angry with him. And I don't care whose fault it is. And I sought counsel. I did what the book said. I sought counsel from someone that I trusted. And I wrote down everything that I felt in a very Al-Anon-y way, like not accusing anybody and just saying, this is how I feel. And I said, you know, I don't know how to solve this problem. I don't know where to begin, but I hate being angry with you. I feel lonely and bereft. And then I said everything that I wanted to say. And I said, you don't have to respond. Just when you get home from work, hug me hard. And that's exactly what he did. And we're good. And, you know, that's how our marriage works. And, you know, I'll close by saying none of this would have been possible without my watchword, surrender, surrender, surrender. But, and this is, you know, like tongue-in-cheek, all the women will get what I'm saying, you know, boys are dumb. And, you know, I love my boy. I love my husband. But he doesn't get me sometimes. And my job on those, at those points in time is to understand that and to make myself, you know, listen, to not make myself, but to become someone who can listen and to become someone who can talk in a rational way, or sometimes not talk at all. Like, he's not a talky guy. So I said, you don't have to say anything. He would have been incapable. And I recognized that. And I said, just hug me hard. And he came home. He's so British. And he said, you wanted a hug? And I said, yes. And he hugged me hard. Yeah. And I'll wrap up. So, you know, my house is again filled with harmony. And I'm so grateful. And, you know, it started with one word, one place, and one thing. Surrender, surrender, and surrender. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you so much, Nancy P. Appreciate you getting us started off today. And we do value everyone's experience that's on the line with us today. So we do ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you'll give me your first name and the first initial of your last name, and you'd like to read or share on what was read, go right ahead.
Melissa C.
Katie G. from Boston. Katie G.
Cindy B.
Amy M. C.
And Katie.
Carolyn S. from New York.
I got Carolyn.
Cindy B.
Amy M. C.
I got Amy.
Cindy B.
Thank you, Cindy. I got Melissa, Katie, Carolyn, Amy, and Cindy. Did I miss somebody in there?
Tony B.
Tony.
Please don't forget to state where they're from.
Margaret D., okay, Georgia.
Margaret D.
Perfect. All right, so let's start with this group, please. I have Melissa C., Katie G., Carolyn, Amy, Cindy, Tony, and Margaret. When you get up to pitch, if you'd go ahead and give the state in which you're calling from or the country, then that way folks can find you on the member list. Melissa C., good morning, and go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I'm Melissa C., I'm from New York. Recovered compulsive overeater. And thanks, Jen, so much for your service. And, you know, this concentration, and Nancy, thank you so much. That was really, chuckled and could feel it. I get it. I really get it. Concentrating on my own spiritual demonstration, that for me is like, that's everything, you know, because there is an order here. When I read this, it's first I make the reparations, you know, and then I explain the new principles. It says to thoroughly explain it. And I kind of laugh at that because I've been thoroughly explaining things to the people in my life, my whole life. And I think the thorough explanation of whatever principle I'm embarking on, it kind of goes in one ear and out the other if I don't demonstrate it. You know, I've thoroughly explained that I'm no longer going to do whatever, and then I proceed to do it. So my explanations mean little. So the most important thing is proceeding, to begin, to put the principles into action at home. And I got to tell you, that's been the most challenging thing for me throughout my entire recovery life. You know, we learn what to do. I was taught by my sponsor, you're going to learn this way of living, and then guess what? Then you're going to go live it. The purpose is not just to live on meetings. The purpose, although I love meetings and I love fellowship and I love outreach, they're crucially important to me. The important thing is, how are you going to live this program that you're learning? And I have to say that I have learned a lot of what to do through what I shouldn't do, by doing what I shouldn't do. And, you know, in my recovery journey, I've been so eager to live this program, and especially attempted to school everyone in my life and how they needed to be living these principles too, namely loving and tolerant. Like, I was shoving being loving and tolerant down people's throats, and I wanted everyone around me to be helpful and friendly. And so I talked about it in a way that was almost demanding it from people. And I have to say that, you know, one of the greatest things I've learned and failed at was doing this to my kids, especially my daughter. You know, in her adolescent years, I would treat her like a sponsee, encouraging her to see everything from an entirely different angle. And I've learned that, no, practice it, live it, let your children and the people around you see what it looks like. And I have to say that the payoff has been tremendous. Every one of my relationships, I'm just going to close up with this, has been unbelievably improved by these principles that I have put into application in my life at once. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Melissa C. from New York. Up next, we have Katie G. from Boston, followed by Carolyn.
Hey, Jen. Hey, everyone. This is Katie G. Jen, thanks for your service in Boston. Recovered compulsive eater, and man, is this such a powerful paragraph. If anybody knew me when I came into recovery, Susie single, no kids, infertile, and today, practicing honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love is the main purpose of my life. If you know me in step 10 or step 11, I work this all the time. And not because I'm a good person, I'm not saying that, actually, because I'm really troubled. A couple weeks ago, I did a step 10 spot check inventory on my husband because he wanted to go to a business dinner with me. And, you know, I was irritated. I didn't want to go. And a fellow lovingly pointed out to me that, you know, he wanted me to go. We have been together for 10 years. And for the first time in 10 years, he wanted me to go. And I love this line, argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And then we can discuss it in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. So I like to argue. I like to defend. I like to rationalize, but if I'm in that mode, if I'm thinking I'm right and you're wrong, I'm going to eat. Eating's going to be a step up. I can't. And this atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness, I find it super challenging with a 7-year-old and a 4.5-year-old. They can talk back. They can be screaming in my face. But I'll tell you what, they are my greatest teachers. How can I be fair? How can I go to them and say, Mommy was wrong. I didn't mean to yell. That was not acceptable. I don't say acceptable, but I expressed to them that I was wrong. And that's a really humbling process. The other thing I really like is this the sex ideal prayer, right? Like I earnestly pray for the right ideal. Guidance needs questionable situations, sanity, and the strength to do the right thing. I'm constantly going through the step 10 inventory process to figure out how to be involved with normal people, right? Like how to shut my mouth when my husband says something I disagree with. How to shut my mouth and just let my kids be kids. What is it about me that thinks that my 7- and 4-year-old need to act like grown-ups? And if they're screaming, they're bothering me, right? Like they're just trying to be kids. So I adore this paragraph, and I will wrap up and say, I have seen my and my kids change. My husband accepts my apologies today. He moves on. He apologizes to me. We move on together. And the other day I said to him, you know, it's been 10 years. We haven't killed each other. And he told me I was beautiful and that he loved me. And if anybody knows my husband, that's a really big deal. So I'm grateful for this process and to continue to do it with you all one day at a time.
Thank you so much, Katie G. from Boston. Up next, we have Carolyn. Carolyn, good morning. And if I could get the first initial of your last name and where you're calling from, that'd be great.
Sure. It's Carolyn S., as in Sam, from New York. I am a recovered compulsive overeater and very, very grateful. I'm so happy to be on the line. I was having technical problems yesterday, the day before. I forget when I was trying to share. Anyway, I was listening to this stuff and just, it's amazing how much my perspective changes over time. I've been in program 22 years, and my most recent abstinence is a little over 2 years. And in all that time, there have been things hiding in this book that I'm sure were not there before, because it's like, wait a minute, that is really important. I didn't even underline that. And I've got to tell you, my book is full of underlining and highlighting and circling. Get the idea. I mean, it's falling apart. So this is not my first. But anyway, I've got a new book, and I'm excited. So for me, right now, marital relations, they are very, very strained. I've been married almost 35 years, and we were friends for 4 years before that. So it's like I can barely remember a life before him. You know, I was 23. And now I'm 62. And we have 2 kids, one of which in particular has had a lot of issues. She's gone through the ringer the last year, well, more than that since pandemic. And yesterday she got her graduate degree, and it was so, so exciting. You know, she graduated from college into the pandemic, no real graduation, descended into a couple of years of mental hell, hospitalized twice with suicidal thinkings. And now she's not only okay, she's thriving, and I'm so grateful. And, you know, my illness has forever impacted my closest relationships, my kids, my husband, my parents, my brother, my friends. It goes on and on. I am a different person. I'm still me. I'm the same person that I've been since I was born. You know, I went through the same things. But when I look back, I see things differently, you know, and I understand now why I behaved in certain ways, and so much more is becoming clear. I've been let me back up for a second. I'm bipolar. Okay, so that didn't become clear to me until I was 31, and I had to leave my job and corporate America for good after I had a huge breakdown. So, yeah, that's a whole other story, but it adds a lot of stress to the relationship on top of everything else. And the question I guess now is, what do I want for the future in my relationships, especially with my husband? There are times when I'm like, oh, this is why I married you. This is great. Yeah, I remember. And other times, like, well, why the hell did I ever date you? You know, you're an asshole. Excuse me. You know, and I just want out, 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 out. And, you know, lately it's someplace in the middle. And I have been considering a trial separation. I haven't spoken to him about this yet, and it's not something I want to move too quickly on. But I've been rolling it around in my head for a while. And then I thought, well, maybe I can start even smaller, just like I'm going to go visit my brother in Arizona
please?
For a week. Okay, thank you. But the possibilities that being part of this program and learning from each other are just endless and wonderful. And I'm so grateful to be here and to be with all of you. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Carolyn S. from New York. Up next, we have Amy C., followed by Cindy B. Good morning, Amy. Where are you calling in from today?
Good morning. This is Amy M.C. from Massachusetts. Oh, gosh. You know, God gives us exactly what we need. What's really resonating with me is this honesty piece. What keeps coming up for me this week are ways that I'm still being dishonest. And just like other people have been talking about, like the closest people to them, my daughter, who's 11, is the one who's showing me how I'm not being honest. And it's kind of breaking my heart in a way. You know, I have a disease of thinking. And so, yeah, the food's down right now, right? The food is a symptom. But what's another symptom for me? This idea of decluttering lately, you know, what is occupying my mind? And she's just showing me ways that I'm being dishonest. You know, I told her I wasn't going to go through her things anymore. And then she realized I had gone through some other things. And she's like, you keep saying you're going to not do something and then you do it. You're, you know, you're just lying. And all this thing. Oh my gosh, I need to stop talking and I need to show with my actions. Thank you, God, for showing me this, for letting my 11-year-old speak the truth to me and say, Mom, no, you're still doing this. Gosh, I'm doing it a way I don't even know. What does that mean for me? That means I need to keep working with God and asking that I see where I'm not walking the walk. I can talk the talk. You know, my students know my talk. My daughter knows my talk. But if I'm not putting things into action, that's not helpful. But here's where I have put it in action. So even though, you know, I got rid of something without checking with her and she was upset. We got to talk about it. Guess what? P.S. She opened up about other things, not because I hounded her, but because I really listened. I was being of service to her. Tell me more, honey. What else? Tell me more. I need to know. I need to learn and grow. And she opened up all these other things that were bothering her, not about me, but about her dad. I just got divorced. I am divorced, people, and that is a huge blessing. Because guess what? I can't save anyone. That's something that I had to get honest with myself about. I can't save anyone. You know, I want everyone to have recovery, but I can't force it down people's throats. What I can do is walk and talk the same. Here's where I am walking and talking the same. Tragedy in friends' lives, and you know, my mom having an estranged relationship with this friend of like a million years. And I got to share how I made an amends with this person, you know. And my mom reached out. Oh, thank you. I'll pass with this. You know, she's following program. Why? Because she sees me walking the walk. So I can walk the walk and talk the talk if I stay close to God and work the steps in all of my affairs. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Amy M.C. from Massachusetts. Up next, we have Cindy B., followed by Tony B. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. I'm Cindy B. from Boston area. And I have just finished my ninth step in my vision for you. With my sponsor, so it's been really, really great. I just wanted to talk a little bit about something that stood out for me in this paragraph, and you know, it says when your prospect has made such reparations as he can to his family and thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. And my experiences in working especially with my son, who's an adult, he's in his 40s, and we're also in business together. So what I really notice is that it only takes one person to have a good relationship, and sometimes I get resentful that, you know, I'm the one always making amends, or I'm the one always having to, you know, make the adjustments. But, you know, I'm living these principles, and that's where I need to stay. And when I don't, I definitely suffer. He suffers. And, you know, even though there are times where I really want him to apologize to me, or I want him to admit that he was wrong, you know, that's hard for him, and I can see he even suffers with it. And so my thoughts are always, how can I be considerate? How can I be generous? How can I be kind? And then how can I just move to, you know, love, you know, love and compassion? And what I really notice is when I apologize to him cleanly, like really clean apology, he softens to me. And, you know, I love this boy. You know, he is, you know, one of the dearest things in my heart. And so it's okay. And I also know that even though he's in his 40s, he's still not my peer. You know, I'm still, you know, I've lived longer than he has. And so it's really important for me to see that there are many things that he may judge me for, but he can't see them from my perspective because he's not lived it. And I don't have to make him understand who I am or, you know, but I also can ask to be spoken to, you know, with kindness as well. So I will pass with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Cindy B. from Boston. Up next, we have Tony B. Good morning, Tony.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for your service. My name's Tony B. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Thank you for all the shares so far. Yes, working with others. So I've worked with them, well, you know, I don't often come across these very, very low bottom ones who have not got a job. Well, maybe they haven't got a job, but that need charity. I think we've been talking about kind of sponsees needing charity. And then telling them, you know, you can get well, just making that so clear, you can get well regardless of anyone. Recover yourself. And this moves on to talk about it in the home, if they're lucky enough to still have a home. And most of us do, coming into OA these days. But it's great news because I and I do notice sponsees of mine getting very twisted up and hurting themselves quite a lot by blaming and fault finding and arguing in the home. And I'm not saying I don't, by the way, but I've learned a lot by helping others. So yeah, these defects can be glaring. And a sponsee can moan to me about you know, arguments and difficulties at home. But no matter how glaring their defects, I need always to focus my sponsee's attention and gently, because this is not always easy to sort of say it, you know, but gently guide them to do their work, you know, and remind her that she can get well regardless of anyone, regardless of the circumstances that are going on. I suppose there could be extremes and that wouldn't be the case, but I haven't come across them. And then I would ask them, who's it hurting, you know, as you argue and try to control and demand. And I recognize this so much, and it's getting better in my home, but this kind of attitude of, we have to get this sorted out, we must talk and get this changed now, and that kind of demanding that things get sorted. But it's hard because dependency and that interdependency can be so strong. But the serenity and the surrender are really so important. Yeah, and it comes back to the serenity prayer. I can't change people, places, or things. I can only change me and my attitude and my approach. So, yeah, I was thinking too, you know, the family may see their faults and admit them, or they may not, but I can recover and live a peaceful life and practice these principles regardless. And then I was thinking too about the making reparations. Step 9, thoroughly explain to them the new principles by which they're living. I'm not sure that I've ever really done that. I suppose in my step 9 amends, I would say, like, I won't recover from compulsive overeating unless I make this amends to you. But that's not really quite that. But I think the actions do speak much louder than words. Oh, thank you. And I just want to finish with, how do I improve my home life? By helping others improve their home life. And it really is working for me. Thank you for letting me share. Okay.
Thank you so much, Tony B. from Scotland. Appreciate you. All right. And let me just tell everybody where we're reading before we get to you, Margaret. One moment, please. We are in chapter number 7, Working with Others in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're on page 98. We're reading the third paragraph that begins with, now the domestic problem, through one paragraph, ending with, discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Margaret D., if you'd like to go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Margaret D. in Georgia. This paragraph really speaks to me about doing the 10th step. And one of the biggest problems that I've had doing a 10th step is in the last line where it says, on page 98, where it says, argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. Boy, that just cuts me off at the ankles. I might not argue with the person in my family, but in the back of my head, I've got a little room, a little cupboard where I can store, well, if they really would have done whatever, or it was their fault because they don't understand. Or so there may be a lot of judgment that goes on for me in that. And when I do the 10th step, it asks that... we ask God to remove whatever it is, whether it's whatever the difficulty is, whether it's a resentment or a fear. Gosh, I can't even remember what they are right now. Selfishness and dishonesty. And then at the end of the 10th step, I am supposed to look and see, did I harm them? And what this paragraph says to me is what it speaks to me about is if I keep in mind their welfare, then it changes from me judging them to me being able to see, well, maybe if you can't stop thinking that it was their fault about whatever, maybe I could go find somebody else to help. So I guess all I'm trying to say really in this wordy share here is that this really helps me to keep the focus on myself. What did I do? How did I harm them? And to work on, asking God to show me and direct me how to behave differently towards them so that I'm not harming them and I'm not, putting the blame on them. It's not about them. It's about me. And then the last thing is, if I do this over a period of time, it's sure to have an effect on the family so that only by me changing first can anything be really accomplished. That's kind of how I'm looking at it. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's my story. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Margaret D. from Georgia. All right. Well, we've made it halfway through. We still have some time on the clock for others to share. We do value everyone's experience, strength, and hope that's shared on the line. We ask that you limit your share to every third day and share the air so that others might also get to share their experience as well. I'll take a list of names, first name, and then first initial of your last name, please. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Phil J.
And Marie M.
Sorry, I got a, let me just stop there. I got a Phil, I got a something C. Who was that?
Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
David M.
David M. And then Phil.
Anne Marie M.
J.
I got David M. and Anne Marie M.
Lee A.
Was there, was there a Phil in there?
Phil J.
I thought we were still there.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. Okay. But I think that's all we're going to have time for. We'll see. So all I have time for, I think, is Jennifer C., David M., Phil J., Anne Marie M., and Jessica. So if you weren't able to get your name in there as that second hour. Jennifer C., tell me where you're calling from. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning, Jen. Thanks for your service. I am calling from Greenville, South Carolina. This is Jennifer C., recovered and so grateful one day at a time. You know, what I love about this book is it's so practical. You know, it teaches me that I have this mind, this obsessive mind, and once I get locked in on something, if I really have an alcoholic mind, then I better not get locked in on the wrong things, right? Because they become obsessions. Because I don't graduate from this obsessive mind when I put down the food. It just transfers over to other obsessions. And so what this book is teaching me is like, hey, you got to get obsessed with some other things. You got to concentrate on the right things, because your brain needs something to concentrate on, right? So instead of eating, go do service. Instead of self-pity, go find someone you can help that's in a worse spot than you today, right? Let's go concentrate on something else. Because this concentrative mind that I have, this mind that's prey to obsessive thoughts, needs to stay focused on the right things if I want to stay spiritually fit today. So instead of getting too caught up in what other people aren't doing or what they are doing or whatever the case may be, this is telling me like, yeah, they're going to be doing things. They're going to not be doing things that they should be doing, right? Sick man's prayer, like, doesn't always have to mean that they're addicts. It can just mean that they're human. They're prone to selfishness. You're surrounded by people prone to selfishness. The difference between you and them is that you're in this distinct entity. And if you get caught up in the wrong things, you might destroy yourself. So you got to follow these other directions. And so the directions for me are, regardless of what they're doing, I'm not going to concentrate on that, right? In fact, I'm going to avoid concentrating on that like it's the plague, like it's going to kick my ass and kill me, just like the food does. Like, I'm going to be so avoiding those things because I know that for me, if I'm really, truly an alcoholic, those are dangerous for me. I can't afford to live there anymore. I might step over in that direction for a few minutes, and I can feel how toxic it is. And so what I'm so grateful for about recovery is that, you know, the good days get better. What used to be a good day before is, like, not a good day anymore. Because the standard changes, and the more you stay on this path and you keep the food down and you keep doing the work, your good days get better. And what used to be tolerable is no longer tolerable for you in your own behavior, in your own conduct, in your own thought life, right? You clean it up quicker because it doesn't feel so good anymore. And so I'm thankful that we have this very clear-cut direction on what to concentrate on, which is my own spiritual demonstration. I turn my attention. God, show me what you would have me be instead. God, show me what you would have me be instead. You know, the more I live in 6 and 7, the less I have to do 10s all day long, right?
Time, please.
Because, okay, I see my selfishness. I see my dishonesty. I see my fault finding. God, please remove it and show me what you would have me be instead. And as soon as I get clarity on the instead, I step into that. And with God's power, God's grace, God's way of life, I can do that today, one day at a time. Thank you all for being here with me this morning. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Up next, we have David M. and then Phil J. David, where are you calling from this morning?
David M. Hi, David M. from Florida.
Thanks, David. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I think it's going to be next in the lineup. But yeah, David M. here. Glad to be here. Working with others is very frustrating and very fulfilling at the same time. You know, it really, I grew up a single child. Pretty much a single child. And I didn't have a lot of people, a lot of brothers and sisters to get along with, work with socially. But working with others really helps me, you know, because when I'm in the food, I am shut off from society. I don't socialize. I don't get, you know. But working with others is really a grace. Because you start working with your brothers and your fellows, and it gets you socially into it, and it really helps spiritually. It helps you grow, helps me grow spiritually, and like I said, it's frustrating sometimes. And a lot of times, it's like, wow, I'm really glad I called that person. Or, you know, people get on your nerves. People don't. It's just life. But working with others it's really a blessing. And it really will help you grow I like that part. And help you get out of yourself. I mean, because that's what you need to do. You know, I push people away, push God away, push everything away, and I just go into my shell. I'm really grateful for that. So,
thank you so much, David M. from Florida. Up next, we'll have Phil J. Phil, good morning to you. Phil J. Press star 1.
Phil J., can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead. You can be heard. Where are you calling in from today, Phil?
Oregon. I can relate a lot to what was shared already and also to the passage. This is something that I struggled a lot with when I first started in recovery, was going back and wanting to get everyone in the family to do what I want to do, or wondering why they aren't recovered, and you know, saying, oh well, you know, now I'm this enlightened being and I will you know, set all the actors in the play the way I want them to be in my household. And I found that that's never gonna work. I can't control other people's reactions to life. I can't set the stage. You know, all I can do is try to be of service and be a loving member of my family. And hopefully, ideally, if I'm doing recovery, if I'm involved in the program, maybe I can be an example for them to follow in the best case. And so I have found that all of the misery or, you know, frustration that comes from not pleased with the way that maybe my family behaves or those around me behave can totally be mitigated and replaced with a desire to be of service and to be kind and to be loving to them and to just be really centered with God and anchored to God in my life. And so, you know, I just wanted to share that and thank everyone for this nice meeting.
Well, thanks for hopping on today. Phil J. from Oregon. Up next, we have Anne Marie M., followed by Jessica. Good morning, Anne Marie. Good to hear from you.
Oh, good morning, Jen. This is Anne Marie M., gratefully recovering through God's grace, miraculously recovering through God's grace. The sentence that stood out to me was, see if I can find it because I turned the page, is that is, if he has a home, is that this? Yeah, here it is. That is if he's lucky enough to have a home. And not only just telling my sponsors or people that I work with or people that call to remember how lucky they should be, you know, to even have a home, but not to put it that way. But I have to remember that myself. I'm working on my on step six right now and going through to getting on to step seven. And I loved what that was just said. The more I work on step six and seven, the less I do 10 steps. And it's so true. I need to really look at how my character defects play out with other people, how my character defects affect other people, and what's God's ideal? Like on the other side of that, like what is God's ideal for me? How does he want me to behave? You know, it's just, it's changing. And once I do that work, you know, I can ask God to remove them. And God sees that I'm doing the work. And he does, you know, he has removed a lot of the character defects already. And getting back to that line, lucky enough, that is lucky enough if he does have a home. You know, the first person that shared was talking about how wonderful, you know, her husband was. And I, too, when I have an absolutely wonderful husband, I am blessed. I really am blessed. And I went through many other terrible relationships. And so when I am being judgmental or critical, you know, even if it's just in my head, I need to remember that I'm lucky enough to have such a wonderful husband. Or that when I'm critical of my daughter, I'm lucky enough to have such a wonderful daughter, you know. So it's just the way that I look at it. But that sentence just, I don't know, it's almost like they just put it in there for me today. So that's all I wanted to say. So I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Anne Marie M. Up next, we have Jessica. Jessica, give me the last initial, the first initial of your last name and the state that you're calling from, please.
Hi, this is Jessica C. I'm calling from Kentucky. So this paragraph, you know, I'm on my fifth, I don't know how exactly to share. It's the first time I've really shared on here about personal things like this. But this is my fifth marriage, and I never could figure out what, you know, why I couldn't get things together, why my relationships didn't work out. And then going through this program, I started working on my character defects. I started recognizing, oh, maybe what people have been telling me all these years about, you know, hey, in these all failed marriages, there's a common denominator. Maybe that is actually me. And, you know, learning how to change, because I thought I was great. You know, I didn't think I had any problems. The problems were everybody else, and it never worked out, obviously. So getting into this program, and thank God I got into this program when I did, because this program saved this marriage to this wonderful man I have. Now, I'll admit, in the past, my picker was broken, so my other relationships, you know what? I don't know that I would be as grateful that they were saved, but this one has really, I mean, it's changed my life. And, you know, one of the things that I have learned and practice in my family now is to recognize that I can be a thermostat instead of a thermometer. And to, you know, recognizing that I have the ability through this program to practice these principles and set the tone in the house rather than be reactive to the environment all the time. And, you know, when I started actually living that knowledge and recognizing that, you know, not that I have this supreme power to like change the whole environment, but my presence does change the environment, and how I choose to wield that presence, I guess you could say, you know, impacts how the environment is. And
time, please.
Thank you. Being a thermometer, a thermostat instead of a thermometer, setting the tone, and it's thank God for OA. That's all I can say. Just it has saved my life and saved my marriage. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Jessica C. from Kentucky, for taking us out today. Hope your name's on the member list so that others can find you on the Vision for You website. They'll get to that in the announcements. So hang on. We've got a second unrecorded hour that's coming up. Thank you to everybody who shared. Thanks to everybody who was here today. Again, we're going to have that second unrecorded hour of study where you can share as well if you didn't get a chance today. Well, if you liked that meeting or if you thought it was so awesome you want to share it with somebody else, grab your pen and paper. Here's the share idea for today. For Wednesday, May 21st, 2025, it's 22,451. That's 22451. We're now going to close from a reading in the big book. It's on page 164, and then we'll follow that up by the Serenity Prayer. Penny C., would you please read A Vision for You?
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until